the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, everyone is aware that there was a major tax bill that was passed last year. It's impacting you now if you're going to file your income tax returns. They got rid of state tax deductibility. They limited property tax deductions to $10,000. And then they also limited a new mortgage to $750,000. Formerly, it was $1 million. You also lost your miscellaneous deductions. Now, on the good side, the standard deduction has increased. It's $24,000. It's $12,000 for singles. But you may not be aware there were some great things that happened on the estate planning side, and that's going to be the topic of today's session. Joining me on the program is Adam Sherry. He's an estate planning attorney. Adam, why don't you go through for our listeners the major change that went into effect last year for estates and how that impacts how you plan estate planning-wise today, because a lot of the trusts that are out there may be inappropriate.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. This really is a big deal as far as estate planning is concerned. As you alluded, the lifetime deduction for an individual more than doubled from 1 year to another. And what it's done is upended a lot of estate plans that may have made a lot of sense in the context of a much lower deduction, but nowadays may not entirely be well suited for our new environment as far as the estate tax exemption is concerned.
So why don't you tell us what that exemption is? Tell our listeners, because it's over $11 million, which is a lot of money.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing. So it's currently $11,400,000 per person. And that's as of 2019. So, you know, last year it was $11,180,000. And since it's tied to inflation, when you have such a big base number, you know, we're moving up to $11.4 million in 2019. As I said, that's per person, which means that if a married couple can pass $22.8 million to friends, children, all without estate tax, and that's a combined exemption. And so some of your listeners may be familiar with the fact that that means that they can be making gifts during life, which start to work against that amount, or make that transfer on death. So, and as just as a point of reference, it was about $5.5 million per person in 2017. So this was a very significant jump.
So when you take a look at it, a husband and wife can pass $22.8 million for most Americans. You know, that really means you're not going to pay estate taxes. What about this issue? How does this impact? Because there was a time, Adam, when the exemption was $1 million. I can remember when it was $600,000 under Reagan. And a lot of people put or set up trusts that were called AB trusts. So that, and that's how you get the $22.8 million. You would have to have an AB trust to do that. Explain an AB trust. And why, if you are, let's say, not Larry Lots of Bucks, why you might want to change your estate plan to another type of trust because of the problems this may create when you don't need to have an AB trust.
I'm really glad you brought that up, actually. Just to start at the beginning, an AB trust is a type of trust where during life, it's all in one basket. So, you know, husband and wife can continue to live as they always have. However, on the death of the first spouse, the trust splits from one basket into two baskets. And so we refer to that as an A trust and a B trust. Now, the A trust is allocated to the surviving spouse. And so usually about half of the estate goes into the A trust, and then half of the estate goes into the B trust. As you alluded to, the exemption amount was a lot lower in the past. So when we were dealing with $600,000 or $1 million per person, splitting it up in that way made a lot of sense for a much larger group of people. So for instance, you know, where we're based out here in Southern California at $1 million per person, if you've been saving, maybe you invested in some real property, it was totally understandable that a very average couple would hit that $2 million mark. And so in order to for both spouses to take advantage of that $1 million exemption, they had to split it up. Now, we find ourselves in a situation, as we were just talking about, where we've gone from $2 million as a couple. You know, it's more than 10 times that now. And so splitting it into an A and a B trust on the first spouse's death is no longer necessary. However, if you establish that type of a trust, you know, when you wrote it 10 years ago, 13 years ago, it's still required. So even though you may not need to split it into the A and the B, you are still forced by the terms of your document. And, you know, the problems that that creates is it's expensive from an administrative standpoint on the first death. And it is actually something that needs to be respected. So that means you have to open two new bank accounts. You may have to split title to your house under certain circumstances. So it's really not something that can be ignored at the time of the first spouse's death.
And this is something, let me throw this in the opposite direction, because we know that this tax law sunsets in 2025. And what I'm afraid of, Adam, and you remember this, this happened under George W. Bush. He raised the exemption, and then we got to 2010. It expired, and for a whole year, we were kind of in no man's land. We didn't know what the laws were going to be. And let's take this in the opposite direction. Let's say, okay, let's take Larry lots of bucks. He's worth $22 million. And all of a sudden you get to 2025, it expires, the 11, probably could be almost 12 million exemption with inflation by then, goes away. Wouldn't it be advantageous if you're Larry lots of bucks right now to set up a B trust just in case that exemption goes away?
Absolutely right. And so I think we both remember 2010, and that was a wild year just because the uncertainty was really, you know, difficult for a lot of our clients. Now, you've identified the fact that these exemption amounts change over time. And in truth, if we're being really honest, you know, it's kind of a political football. This is a very charged issue that has made its way into everyday politics. And so it is set to expire in 2025. And so because we talked about the fact that this $11 million exemption per person applies to lifetime transfers as well, you're entirely right that now is a good time for somebody to take advantage of the available exemption and transfer those assets outside of their estate. And you accomplish that in one of the ways to accomplish that is by creating an irrevocable trust and transferring some of that money into the irrevocable trust. But by doing so, you have effectively put it outside of your estate, and it will not be considered part of your estate for estate tax purposes at the point that you pass away. Now, this is going to be something that you're going to want to make sure that you've dotted your I's and crossed your T's. So it's good to work with your financial advisor about this in advance, to bring in an attorney to talk about this. You should be involving your CPA. But it's an excellent strategy to take advantage of something that we have access to right now that we're really not guaranteed to have in the future. And just to add one other thing, you know, the politicians who implemented this increased exemption were serious about it wanting to take effect and actually be utilized by some of the people who are able to take advantage of it. So there is kind of, it's like piggyback legislation or add-on legislation, which is clarifying the fact that a person can make a present transfer while we're in this period when we're eligible for this $11.4 million, and it's going to count and it'll be locked in even if it goes down at some point after 2025.
And that is really important because, Adam, I'm actually doing this with a client. We'll call him Larry Lots of Bucks. His estate is probably worth about $25 million or more. And those assets are appreciable assets. They're stocks that he's owned for a long time that he doesn't want to sell. And it also involves real estate in California, which produces income. It's commercial real estate. That's going up. So talk about also, let's say you transfer $11.4 million into this B trust. And let's say 10 years from now, that $11 million is worth $20 million. So think of what you've avoided by doing this, because that's another $10 million that roughly doesn't get taxed.
You know, that's a great point. I've realized in working with you that you've seen and been a part of so many of these success stories that you're always kind of thinking about the future growth of your client's assets. And that's an excellent point. The issue is that once Larry transfers these assets outside of his estate and into that irrevocable trust, it's free to grow to exactly what it's free to double or triple, and it's still outside of his trust. So he no longer has to be worried about that kind of as a moving target, because he took the action in the present, and then any future growth is not going to be subject to the estate tax. You know, another interesting example that I believe you've had some experience with is oftentimes small business owners or people who have invested in, let's say, a biotech company or a tech company in the early stages, they may own interest in that company and they find out it's going to go public, or it may already be public and they realize, you know what, this stock is going to just keep going up. Those are some of the prime assets that people, and as you said, real estate as well, especially in some of these more populated markets, those are some prime assets that people identify and they know it's going to keep going up. They know that they have enough to live on and they're thinking, you know what, now is a great time to get it out before it just increases inside of my estate, which ultimately increases their estate tax burden.
So if we take a look at this tax law, it changes things for a lot of our listeners. For Larry Lots of Bucks, you really want to take advantage of the B Trust exemption right now, which I'm doing for a lot of our clients that are in that category, just in case it goes away. Because in 2025, or you know what, Adam, we don't even know in 2020, we could get a change in the White House with a different philosophy. And as you said, this is a political football back and forth. So this could change in 2021. It doesn't have to be 2025. So Larry Lots of Bucks, or let's say a business owner, and let's take this case, you have a business that is private, but it is worth a lot of money. It generates a lot of income. And you really have to think about this one. You pass away, your business is worth, let's say, 20, 30 million, and all of a sudden the IRS comes in and takes 40% of it. If you don't take advantage of this, you could, you know, your business, which could be financially sound, could be unfinancially sound if your heirs have to take on a lot of debt to pay the IRS. I could remember a lot of stories like this. When I got in the business in the early 80s, when the exemption was before Reagan, it was like only $175,000.
Absolutely. And so, again, that's a great point. You know, we're talking about a variety of different dimensions of these issues. And so in the industry, we use the term liquidity planning, which very basically means you've referred to this company, which, you know, needs to stay whole in order to continue being as successful as it is. The IRS is going to come knocking and they're going to require that they get paid, you know, their 40% estate tax. And so that's one of the things that people should be looking forward and thinking about. And some of the approaches that have proven very successful are to acknowledge that you may be facing an estate tax liability and specifically think, we need to make sure that there are liquid assets to satisfy that tax liability. Now, that could come in the form of keeping a certain amount in securities that are easy to liquidate, or it could work out well in some sort of a life insurance policy or something like that. But, you know, that really is a very good point that these businesses that so many people have worked so hard to create, they're maybe subject to an interruption if that money needs to be produced in order to cover the tax liability. We've also seen that sometimes in the case of farms too. So there's all sorts of family businesses, different types of industry where the passing of one of the owners, you know, really needs to be thought about from multiple different directions.
I don't know why this is the case. We use Living Trust out here in California. Gosh, they've been being used and very popular going back to the 80s. On the East Coast, it doesn't seem to be used as much. And the reason I'm saying this is I have a lot of East Coast clients who would benefit from having a trust. They could save money. And this was even, Adam, before the $11 million exemption that came into play. And they are told by lawyers on the East Coast that probate is not a big deal. I have a client right now. She's a doctor. She's worth $6 million. I told her, look, probate on your estate is going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost a lot of delays. And also, if something happens to you, your account with us will be frozen because we're not allowed to do anything because it's not like you have successor trustees. And she was told, well, no, it's not, probate's not a big deal. I computed probate on her estate of over $150,000, not to mention delays. Why is, let's say, trust planning not as prevalent on the East Coast? Or you hear this a lot from clients that their attorneys tell, well, probate's not a big deal.
Yeah, you know, that was some really interesting follow-up on your part to look into what probate would actually cost. You know, unfortunately, I'm just going to have to point out sometimes that's the motivation that may be behind some of this advice. People talk about self-interest or, and you know, I mean, honestly, we're talking about this kind of from a 10,000 foot view. So I don't specifically know what was happening with your client's attorney, but to say that it's not an issue, just it's just not accurate. First off, you identified the fact you're dealing with a significant delay. It doesn't cover you in the case of incapacity. So for instance, one of the best things about a living trust being established while you're alive is all those thoughtful provisions that you put into it, they kick in if you were to have a car accident and find yourself in a coma. Well, there's already instructions laid out. You have already identified somebody who is able to kind of pick up the baton of your life and run with it. And they're able to be in touch with your financial advisor, access your assets so they can continue to pay for your children's school or make sure that the mortgage is paid. I mean, there's just so many different things. And you lose those advantages when you don't establish a living trust and instead just rely on a will or rely on what's called a testamentary trust, which is established in the context of a will. And so I really got to say, I think people who are listening who get that advice, they need to do exactly what you did, Jim. And they need to actually look into that probate process because the fees are real. I mean, they're very serious out here. I mean, so to say $150,000 associated with a probate, the thing that bothers me most about that, well, so first off, it's not having it for incapacity. But the other thing that really bothers me about it is oftentimes those fees are established as a percentage of a person's estate. And so that's not actually an approximation of the amount of work that the attorney's doing. And so sometimes that means that the attorney's getting paid way more than they actually put in when it comes to their time and effort. And so I'd really love to hear your clients and your listeners. I'd love to hear that changing in the future because we used to be dealing with a very similar thing, as you said, out here in California. And the word's really spread. And so people understand the downsides of probate, including the significant time delay, the fact that it's public, the fact that it's very costly, and that there's nothing covering you during that interim period when you may have lost capacity due to dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, or some sort of serious accident.
You know, you bring up something, and this always fascinated me when I first got in the business, Adam. We would read about all these mismanaged estates from Groucho Marx to very famous celebrities, and you keep thinking, how did all this information get out? And the way that information got out is when you don't have a trust and you go through probate, all your personal affairs are public knowledge. You can have access to that. And that's something that really struck me.
What's your retirement goal? When it comes to retirement, you've probably heard it's all about achieving your number. At Financial Sense Wealth Management, we believe retirement is all about you. You are not a number. You can achieve your retirement dreams and goals. Let us help you create a consistent source of income, make the best choices on Social Security and Medicare benefits, and build your legacy for the future. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Let's work together and make your dreams come true. Call 888-486-3939 today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Adam, let's talk about putting in protections, because another thing that we're running into more and more is elder abuse. So let's talk about ways to protect that.
Yeah, we really are in this very interesting period where science is helping us to stay healthy longer. And yet, at this point, we find ourselves, you know, that our bodies are continuing on, but we're starting to experience these problems that you're referencing, like Alzheimer's or dementia. And that's where the living trust, which steps in when you lose the capacity to manage your own affairs, really ends up being a benefit. Because you said it, elder abuse is just rampant right now. And it's in response to so many people facing these problems. So by being able to establish a trust, it goes beyond saying who gets what after you pass away. It also means that you're able to identify who's going to look after me, who's going to help protect me. And, you know, that may be a family member, it may be a friend, it may be a private professional fiduciary. But the important thing is that you're identifying somebody who is going to have capacity. They're going to be just as sharp as you were in your prime, so long as you're choosing the right person. But, you know, it's that person who steps in and starts acting on your behalf and is able to really safeguard your finances. Or, you know, it's not even just a matter of safeguarding. Sometimes it's a matter of making sure that your wishes are carried out. Let's say that you want to live in a particular setting, or that you want to live among a particular community. You know, I'm thinking, we worked together with one of your clients, and at the time that she needed her trustee to step in and help her out, she had had she'd been very successful in life, and she had been very well advised and was in a great position financially, but there were still things that she needed help with. And so because she had those sorts of resources, number one, but then also somebody to look after her, she was able to live in a Christian retirement community in the beautiful hills in San Diego, where she was able to share interests with the other people who were there. You know, they took her to her preferred church on Sunday. And so it was just kind of a really good illustration of the fact that she was able to use her trust to enable her resources to help her to continue to live in the way that she wanted to, instead of just kind of being subject to a rather impersonal approach.
Well, you know, one thing, and let's end with this and talk about its importance. Because of the number of elder abuse cases that we run into, what we are recommending with a lot of our clients today, especially when you get over $1 million or more, and there's children involved and the children's spouses, is a professional fiduciary to step in to make sure, because we ran into a case where two sons were in charge of successor trustee. Mom has dementia. She gets put into a retirement home. And these two sons, out of a large family, ended up putting a reverse mortgage on the house, ended up taking assets out of the estate unbeknownst to the other children. And this was brought to our attention. And you see this more and more. So today, we often recommend a professional fiduciary as either a co-trustee, but somebody that can be a check against elder abuse. And I hate to say it, but we're seeing it more and more.
I agree with that position also, and it's something that I regularly recommend in my practice also. And so I'm just going to take us one step back, and let's think about the fact that your children, while you love them and they love you, very well may not be the best suited to act as the financial manager and the social manager of your life. And so, one, we're dealing with just an aptitude, right? Just because you happen to have raised them, and I'm sure you did an excellent job, doesn't necessarily mean that they're able to take that on and do it effectively. So that's one aspect. So identifying a private professional fiduciary is somebody who is trained. This is what they do. Their only job is to help run your life in a way that enables you to continue living in the manner that you want with those same preferences. You know, the other aspect that you're referring to is financial elder abuse really is a big concern. And that's why private professional fiduciaries, you know, especially in a place like the state of California, they're licensed, they are insured, they have continuing education requirements. And it's really nice to know that this person is only focused on you. And the problem sometimes when you have a child doing it, and it's not from a lack of love per se, but sometimes it just kind of creeps in and they're thinking, I may be the remainder beneficiary of whatever is left when mom or dad ultimately passes away. And, you know, unbeknownst to them, or in worst cases, sometimes consciously, that affects their decision making when it comes to your care. And so by bringing in a neutral third party, like a private professional fiduciary, you know that their duty is solely to the person who established the trust. And it's, you know, only in a secondary regard are they concerned about the people who might come later. So yeah, I've found that it's in the best interest of so many of my clients. And it really is a great protection against elder abuse, primarily from the outside world too. These are people who are helping you look over your mail. They're helping to supervise your finances so that if they see suddenly donations to a religious organization that they've never heard of, they're able to follow up on these things. And I find them to be of great service to my clients.
Well, we've just come across, and this is one of the big changes I've noticed in my practice, Adam, is more of this elder abuse. And because as financial advisors, we're on the front line. We see this when all of a sudden strange activity is requested in the account, or all of a sudden large withdrawals are being taken out of the account. Because if you name somebody like a child as a successor trustee, and that child is all of a sudden making large withdrawals out of the account, we have to comply with that. And that's why we see more and more of this. That's why we've taken this approach. Adam, as we close, a couple summary things. If you are Larry Lots of Bucks and you're worth quite a bit of money, either it's a business or assets, you may want to take advantage of the $11.4 million exemption right now, just in case it disappears. That's number one. Number two, because the exemption is so large, if, let's say, you have an estate that's far less than that, you may not want to have an AB trust. So, Adam, isn't there a trust? You guys, I call it a spousal flex trust. You and the profession have different names for it. But it's a trust that allows you to either be an AB trust or not an AB trust, depending on the laws and the size of the assets at the time of death.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, this is something that a lot of clients, when they come in so that we can review their estate plan, just give them a quick update, we're identifying the fact that they currently have an AB trust, and we're suggesting something like a spousal flex trust, also referred to as a disclaimer trust. And so these flex trusts or disclaimer trusts allow the surviving spouse to look at what the exemption amount is at the point that their spouse passes away. And then according to the terms of the trust, they then have the power to choose to create a B trust, but they're not forced to create a B trust. And so what we've done is we've moved them from a situation in an AB trust where they are forced to create that split, regardless of what the exemption amount might be, to putting them in a position where they can take a look, figure out what the exemption amount is on the actual date when the first spouse passes away, and answer the question, is it a good idea to create a B trust? And if it is a good idea, let's say we're dealing with a situation where the exemption amount has significantly dropped, they can choose to create it if it's going to help. Or if they find themselves in a position like we are now, where the exemption amount is so high, they can say, you know what, this isn't actually going to be a good idea. It's not going to be worth it to me. I'm going to choose to keep it all in the A trust. And so these sorts of flex trusts, disclaimer trusts, are definitely our preferred approach. They're one of the things that we're most often recommending people switch from an AB trust into a disclaimer trust or a flex trust. And it's a really good response to this change in the estate tax exemption amount. And it's also something that people can do today, even if they find themselves with an AB trust that they established in the past. Maybe it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Well, the point that we want to make here is the tax laws have changed. And so what you may had or put in place 10 years ago may no longer be valid in today's environment. Adam, if anybody would like to get in touch with you, you're here in Southern California. How could they do so?
Sure. you know, the best way is probably to send me an email at adam@nancyspector.net. That's adam@nancyspector. You know, I've heard from several of your listeners. They're always interesting with good questions. So I'm always happy to respond and engage.
Thanks so much for joining us on the program and keeping our listeners up to date.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes my interview with Adam Sherry. I wanted to have him on the program because there are so many issues we're running into today, from elder abuse to inappropriate estate planning documents or not having any estate planning of documents. We talked about the client I'm dealing with, and we see this on the East Coast where people are told, well, probate's not a big deal. Well, yeah, $150,000, $200,000, sure, nice for the attorney. Or you get into situations where you have family complications. And it's one thing that I have learned over the years. You know, you may love your children may love you, but boy, I tell you, when it comes to money, someday I need to write a book on this. I have some of the worst horror stories I could tell you, and it's just something that we have learned to adapt in terms of the environment that we're living in, and seeing, just as Adam mentioned there, with the flex trust or disclaimer trust, because we know that estate taxes tend to be a political football. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they lower them, sometimes they raise the estate taxes. And so you need to put yourself in a position where number one, you're living longer. And so the longer you live, you may run into issues like dementia, Alzheimer's, and you want to be prepared. You want to make it easier for your heirs, yourself, a surviving spouse, and you want to avoid some of the issues, whether it's taxes, probate, or, I hate to say it, elder abuse. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.